Hello, everyone. Welcome to another issue of the Arizona Daily Star for today, Tuesday, the 14th of October, 2025. I'm Steve. I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and welcome in. I'm going to be reading the Star today, but I thought before we turn to the Star, we'd have a look at what the National Weather Service has to say in its synopsis for the next few days. A few patches of fog early this morning with drier conditions returning today and continuing through the remainder of the week. Temperatures will be below normal through Saturday, then returning to normal levels Sunday and Monday. So I guess for the next few days, it's going to be cooler and drier than it has been. So that's probably pretty good news for most of us. Well, let's go ahead and turn to the Arizona Daily Star for today, the 14th of October, 2025. And our top story is the story about the hostages and the prisoners that have been released. Netanyahu declares he is, quote, committed to this peace. All living hostages, that's all 20 living hostages held by Hamas and hundreds of Palestinian prisoners held by Israel walked free Monday as part of a ceasefire pausing 2 years of war that decimated the Gaza Strip and killed tens of thousands of Palestinians. Hamas said Monday it would hand over the bodies of 4 of 28 deceased captives, though it was not immediately clear when the rest would be released. Israel said it freed more than 1,900 Palestinian prisoners as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal. Speaking to Parliament, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared he was, quote, committed to this peace, unquote, raising hopes that the ruinous war, which triggered other conflicts in the Middle East, might come to an end. But fundamental questions remain over when and how and whether Hamas will disarm and who will govern Gaza. Cheering crowds greeted buses of released prisoners in the West Bank and Gaza, while families and friends of the hostages gathered in a square in Tel Aviv, Israel, and cried out with joy and relief as news arrived that the captives were free. U.S. President Donald Trump flew to the region and addressed the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. He later went to Egypt for a summit to discuss the U.S. proposal and its proposed deal and post-war plans with other leaders. Speaking ahead of Trump's address in the Knesset, Netanyahu pledged he was committed to this peace and noted that on the Jewish calendar, today marks the end of 2 years of war. Well, despite the ceasefire, a long road ahead exists for Gaza. While major questions remain about the future of Hamas and Gaza, the exchange of hostages and prisoners raised hopes for ending the deadliest war between Israel and the military group. And we see here in the Star some pictures that opened this article or modified this article. And you can see here people reacting as they gather Monday to watch a live broadcast of Israeli hostages released from Gaza at a plaza known as Hostages Square in Tel Aviv, Israel. We can see these ladies very emotional at the prospect of the release of the prisoners. And then they show another picture of a Palestinian prisoner making the victory sign after being released from an Israeli prison as part of a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. Upon his arrival in the West Bank of the West Bank city of Ramallah on Monday. That's a little bit of information, folks, on hostages and the prisoners have been released. So now we wait to see what comes next. The next and actually last story on the front page this morning is about national parks. National parks are feeling the pressure to reshape history. President Donald Trump's campaign to have the government tell a happier story of American history is confronting its toughest challenge. There is no positive spin to be put on slavery. At Frozen in Time, Harper's Ferry National Historical Park, people in the National Park Service are navigating shoals that federal storytellers across the nation must now negotiate. How do you tell the truth if it might not be the whole truth? As part of a broader Trump directive reaching across the government and the country, the Park Service is under orders to review interpretive materials at all its historical properties and remove or alter descriptions that inappropriately disparage Americans past or living, or otherwise sully the American story. This comes as the Republican president has complained about institutions that go too deep, in his view, on how bad slavery was. It's too soon to know whether his, that is Trump's, directive is causing the arc of history to bend toward sanitized revisionism. There are at least scattered indications that the reviewers may be treading carefully in reshaping America's core stories. Brianna Wheeler hopes they stay true to history. She is a direct descendant of one of the abolitionist John Brown's anti-slavery raiders who laid siege to the U.S. Armory at Harper's Ferry in a bloody 1859 assault that set the stage for the Civil War. The shame of slavery must not be ignored, she said. You can't wipe that, she told the Associated Press. You can't erase that. It's our obligation to not let that be erased. At some parks, employees on the ground told the Associated Press, brochures with references to enslavers have been pulled for revision, and everything is getting a hard look. Yet, in the guided tour about Brown's raid, the story presented about slavery remains unflinching, and at Fort Pulaski National Monument outside Savannah, Georgia, a photo of a whipped yet dignified man with welts across his back still occupied its prominent spot in the exhibit. And here we see a picture of Brianna Wheeler, seen here in this picture on September 22nd in Portland, Oregon. And Ms. Wheeler is a direct descendant of one of the abolitionist John Brown's anti-slavery raiders. The raiders laid siege to the U.S. Armory at Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, in a bloody 1859 assault that set the stage for the Civil War. Wheeler said, slavery cannot be erased. That was her message. So that's our front page this morning. The stories were, two of them, hostages and prisoners are released, and Netanyahu declares he is committed to this peace, and then finally, national parks feel the pressure to reshape history. So let's go ahead and move now to the local section of the Arizona Daily Star. That's the Tucson and region section of the Star. And I'm bringing that up right now, and here it is. So there are a few stories I can read this morning to you. And the first one is opening with a picture of Alberta O'Neill. She laughs as her son feels her belly during an ultrasound administered by student midwife Nicole Clemens at the O'Neill's home in Lake Havasu City. And the story is that families in rural Arizona are choosing midwives over hospitals. A tub, a home, a bed, a tiny hand held for the first time, soundtracked by the resounding whines of a newborn, a baby's first battle cry. This space holds a miniature militia, a mother, a father, a child, and a midwife. In Lake Havasu City, located along the northwest edge of Arizona, some families have chosen home over hospital. There is only one labor and delivery unit in the area, limiting options for local families. Women across the outskirts of the state have turned to home birth as a viable alternative for prenatal labor and delivery and postpartum care. These regions, formerly referred to as maternity care deserts, paved the way for certified professional midwives to help fill the gap where obstetric care is sparse or non-existent. Several factors can contribute to choosing a midwife, including spirituality, lack of trust in health care systems, prioritization of autonomy or economics. An in-hospital birth without complications or health insurance can be 4 times as expensive as using a midwife. There are around 100 CPMs across Arizona, and most of them are concentrated in Phoenix and the greater Maricopa County area, followed by Tucson, Flagstaff, and Prescott, according to the Arizona Community Birth Coalition. And by the way, I said CPMs, and that's Certified Professional Midwives. So that's the story about families in rural Arizona choosing midwives over hospitals. Let's move to our next story in the Tucson and Region section of the Star. And if you're just joining us, welcome in. I'm Steve, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'm reading the Star for today, Tuesday, the 14th of October, 2025. This story is called UA Saves 20 Jobs Despite Fed Cutback. Well, the University of Arizona has managed to retain 20 of the 40 jobs it expected to lose after the federal government eliminated the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, -education. That's SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, ED, and cost the UA $6.6 million a year. In an email sent to the UA faculty, Senator Secretary of the Faculty Katie Zeiters said the university's central administration was able to find funds to retain 20 positions across 12 Arizona counties. Zeiters said that those positions are funded for another month and are expected to continue after further one-time carry-forward funds are made available through the Arizona Department of Health Services. SNAP Ed is part of Cooperative Extension, a nationwide educational network within land-grant institutions like the UA that translates university research into practical knowledge for communities. In Arizona, SNAP Ed is administered by the Arizona Department of Health Services in collaboration with UA's Cooperative Extension, county health departments, and community organizations. SNAP-Ed, a program under the U.S. Agriculture Department's Food and Nutrition Service, was eliminated from the federal fiscal year 2026 budget under the One Big Beautiful Act, quote-unquote, passed by Congress and signed by President Donald Trump. At the UA, SNAP-Ed employed 70 people in 53 full-time equivalent positions across the state, UA Extension Director Ed Martin said in an earlier notice. After the termination, Zeiters and others wrote a memo September 3rd to top-level UA administration asking them to specifically provide short-term bridge funding, foster donations through university donors and partners, and improve university-wide transparency on the impact of programs ending, among other actions. Others citing it were Duarte Diaz, a UA professor in the College of Agriculture, Life, and Environmental Sciences, and Stephanie Grutzmacher, an associate professor in the School of Nutrition Sciences and Wellness. UA spokesperson Mitch Zack declined to answer questions on, specifically, if the UA's central administration has provided bridge funds to support SNAP-Ed, if the UA has received Arizona Department of Health Services, that's ADHS, funds to retain the positions, and how much. And also, Mr. Zack did not answer if the UA is assisting SNAP-Ed in raising money through donations. So that's a little bit of an update, folks, on 20 jobs saved in the SNAP-Ed program despite the Fed cut. Now we're going to go on to read the last couple of stories in the Tucson and Region section of the Star. The first one is Wilcox Wine Fest spotlights winning wineries and barrel tastings. After a long summer tending the vineyards and weeks of harvesting the fruit, the folks of Southern Arizona's wineries like to let their hair down, pop a cork or three, and celebrate the fruits of their labor. Of course, no one likes to drink alone, so more than a dozen wineries are setting up tents in Wilcox's historic Railroad Park this coming weekend, for the fall installment of the Wilcox Wine Festival. They'll be pouring their latest vintages and fan favorites, and a few will be showing off their new hardware from prestigious contest wins. Several smaller and newer Southern Arizona wineries walked away with big wins in state and national competitions, including Strive Vineyards. Desiree and Ryan Girth took home 5 gold and 2 silver medals in 2025 Arizona Wine Competition last spring. The Wilcox Winery also got Best Cabernet Franc. So, that's a little bit on the Wilcox Wine Fest spotlights winning wineries and barrel tastings. If you go, the festival takes place at Railroad Park, and that address is 157 North Railroad Avenue. Tickets available at the gate are $45 for 10 tasting tickets, $35 for 5 on Saturday, and $40 and 30 on Sunday, respectively, for those tastings. Admission includes a commemorative wine glass. Beer tastings are $20 for 10 tasting tickets and a glass. In addition to the wine tasting experiences, the festival will have live entertainment throughout each day. Poster Child and Sugar Thieves are performing Saturday. Dos Sueños and Walt Richardson Trio is playing Sunday. So that's a little bit of information, folks, on the Wilcox Wine Fest coming to Wilcox this weekend. And then finally, our story in the Tucson and Region section of the Star is Tucson Symphony extends music director contract. And here they show a picture of the music director, Jose Luis Gomez. Well, the Tucson Symphony Orchestra will celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2029 with Jose Luis Gomez at the podium. This week, Gomez signed his third contract extension since becoming the orchestra's music director in 2016. The 4-year contract keeps him here through the 2029-2030 season. I knew that whatever other events around my career are happening, I wanted to continue my commitment to the Tucson Symphony for this important milestone, and I wanted to be part of it, said Gomez, who has a robust international career as a guest conductor. So, this is exciting, he said. TSO President and CEO Paul Meacham said, quote, "From the first time I heard Jose Luis Gomez conduct the Tucson Symphony, I realized how special this relationship is between our maestro, the TSO musicians, and audiences. And so, Jose Luis's dedication to the orchestra and to the community is unwavering. There you have it, folks. Tucson Symphony extends the music director contract of Jose Luis Gomez. Wilcox Wine Fest this weekend spotlights winning wineries and barrel tastings. Looks like the UA is going to keep 20 of its 40 SNAP Ed jobs despite the Fed cut. And then finally, families in rural Arizona are choosing midwives over hospitals. Okay, let's now go to the business section of the Arizona Daily Star. The business section opens with a topic which is near and dear to our hearts. Prices remain too high for many people. And then there's another piece that's called personal finance advice. So let's start with the one about prices being too high. Inflation has risen in 3 of the last 4 months and is slightly higher than it was a year ago when it helped sink then Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential campaign. Yet you wouldn't know it from listening to President Donald Trump or even some of the inflation fighters at the Federal Reserve. Trump told the United Nations General Assembly late last month, quote, "Grocery prices are down, mortgage rates are down, and inflation has been defeated," unquote. And at a high-profile speech in August, just before the Fed cut its key interest rate for the first time this year, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said, quote, "Inflation, though still somewhat elevated, has come down a great deal from its post-pandemic highs. Upside risks to inflation have diminished," unquote. Yet, dismissing or even downplaying inflation, while it is still above the Fed's target of 2%, poses big risks for the White House and the Federal Reserve. For the Trump administration, it could find itself on the wrong side of a potent issue. Namely, surveys show that many Americans are still seeing higher prices as a major burden on their finances. The Fed may be taking an even bigger gamble. Specifically, it has cut its key interest rate on the assumption that the Trump administration's tariffs will only cause a temporary bump in the inflation. If that turns out to be wrong, if inflation gets worse or remains elevated for longer than expected, the Fed's inflation-fighting credibility could take a hit. That credibility plays a crucial role in the Fed's ability to keep prices stable. If Americans are confident that the central bank can keep inflation in check, they won't take steps, such as demanding sharply higher pay when prices rise, that can launch an inflationary spiral. Companies often increase prices further to offset higher labor costs. But Karen Dynan, that's D-Y-N-A-N, Karen Dynan, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, said this week that with memories of pandemic-era inflation still fresh and tariffs pushing up the cost of imported goods, consumers and businesses could start to lose confidence that inflation will stay low. If that proves to be the case, in hindsight, it will be that the Fed cuts, and I do expect several more, are going to be seen as a mistake, Karen Dynan said. So far, the Trump administration tariffs haven't lifted inflation as much as many economists expected earlier this year, and it remains far below its 9.1% peak 3 years ago. Still, consumer prices increased 2.9% in August from a year earlier, up from 2.6% at the same time last year, and above the Fed's 2.0% target. The government is scheduled to release the September inflation report on Wednesday, but the data will probably be delayed by the government shutdown. Tariffs have pushed up the cost of many imported items, including furniture, appliances, and toys. Overall, the cost of long-lasting manufactured goods rose nearly 2% in August from a year earlier. It was a modest gain, but it comes after nearly three decades when the cost of such items mostly fell. The cost of some everyday goods are still rising more quickly than before the pandemic. Specifically, grocery prices moved up 2.7% in August from a year ago, the largest gain outside the pandemic since 2015. Coffee prices have soared nearly 21% in the past year, partly because Trump has slapped 50% import taxes on Brazil, a leading coffee exporter, and also because climate change-induced droughts have cut into coffee bean harvests. Most Fed officials are still concerned that inflation is too high, according to the minutes of its September 16th through 17th meeting. Yet, they still chose to cut their key interest rate because they were more worried about the risk of worsening unemployment than about higher inflation. But the concern for some economists is that the ongoing rollout of tariffs and the fact that many companies are still implementing price hikes in response could result in more than just a temporary boost to inflation. So this is the gamble. And currently, prices remain too high for many people, says the article. Let's move on to this second article, and this is about personal finance. As the end of 2025 approaches, a viral TikTok trend is helping people achieve their wellness goals, specifically the Great Lock-In, it's called. It encourages participants to finish the year strong by fully focusing on their life goals from September 1 through December 31. Many people focus on exercise or eating healthier, but the trend can also help you achieve your financial goals. There are no set rules for the Great Lock-In. The phrase lock-in, quote-unquote, is popular on social media, and it means to focus intently on a task. Something I like about this particular trend is that it's like New Year's resolution's little sister, said Lindsay Brian Podvin. She's the financial therapist and founder of Mind Money Balance, a financial wellness podcast and blog. For Julissa Mercedes, who's 28 years old, one of her lock-in goals is to build a $2,500 emergency savings fund. Having some liquid cash will make me feel a little bit safer, said Mercedes, a San Diego resident who works in finance. Aside from building an emergency fund, Mercedes has three other goals, specifically making a new friend, creating a morning routine, and picking up a new hobby. The Great Lock-In is meant to help people achieve New Year's resolutions that might have fallen by the wayside. If you started your year planning to pay down debt by cutting unnecessary expenses and have yet to follow up on that, this challenge might help you with that goal. I think that's appealing to a lot of people who are just tired of feeling stuck and like they haven't been able to make any progress, said Ben Markley, who's personal finance director and host of Sketchy Advice by YNAB, a budgeting app, a budgeting application. If you're thinking of participating in the Great Lock-In, or if you're already doing it, here are some expert recommendations to make your financial goals stick. First, review your finances. To build a goal that will benefit you, it's essential to review your finances. Brian Podvin said. She suggested that you review your bank account and spend some time figuring out how much you earn each month, as well as what you spend on it. Next point, set attainable goals. When participating in a challenge, it's best to set attainable goals, Markley said. Sometimes online challenges inspire people to make significant changes, but they can also lead them to create unattainable goals. So, when participating in a challenge, it's best to set attainable goals. Next point, focus on habit building. To continue achieving your financial goals into 2026, Markley recommends centering some of your lock-in goals around building new habits or skills. For example, if your goal is to stop spending on takeout, focus on building a habit that's related to cooking. Next hint, create community and accountability. Social media can be a good place to find community support for achieving your goals, whether it's joining a Facebook group, commenting on creators' videos, or posting your own content. So as she started the Great Lock-In Challenge at the beginning of September, Mercedes also decided to document her experience on TikTok. Sharing her journey with followers, she helps with accountability, she said. And then a couple of last points. Reflect on your relationship with money. As you use the Great Lock-In trend to achieve your financial goals, take a moment to reflect on your overall relationship with money. And finally, it's okay if it's not for you. If you try this challenge and you find out it doesn't work for you, then that's okay, Markley said. You can find something else that works. And it's no reflection on your character if you don't pull off the Great Lock-In, he added. So, that's the business section this morning, folks. Prices are remaining too high for many people of their consumer goods. And then finally, some hints on personal finance and the Great Lock-In. All right, let's go ahead and move now to the nation and world section of the Arizona Daily Star. And I have to slip down to page 31 for that. There we go. Page 31 is the nation and world section of the Star. And it opens with the war in Ukraine and talks about Zelensky planning a trip to the U.S. He seeks provision of long-range weapons and meeting with Trump. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Monday he will travel to the United States this week for talks on the potential U.S. provision of long-range weapons, a day after U.S. President Donald Trump warned Russia he may send Kyiv long-range Tomahawk missiles. A meeting between Zelensky and Trump could take place as early as this Friday, the Ukrainian president said, adding that he also would meet with defense and energy companies and members of the Congress. The main topics will be air defense and our long-range capabilities to maintain pressure on Russia, Zelensky said. He spoke at a meeting with the EU, the European Union, that is, High Representative for Foreign Affairs, Kaja Kallas. That's K-A-L-L-A-S, Kaja Kallas. He said he also would seek further U.S. assistance to protect Ukraine's electricity and gas networks, which have faced relentless Russian bombardment. The U.S. visit follows what Zelensky described as a very productive phone call with Trump on Sunday. Trump later warned Russia that he may send Ukraine long-range Tomahawk missiles if Moscow doesn't settle its war there soon. The missiles would allow Ukraine to strike deeper into Russian territory. So that's a little bit of an update. Zelensky planning a U.S. trip to discuss arms and to meet with the president and other people. Now to the government shutdown. Johnson says he won't negotiate. House Speaker warns this lapse could be the longest in history. Republican Speaker Mike Johnson predicted Monday the federal government shutdown may become the longest in history, saying, quote, he won't negotiate with Democrats until they hit pause on their health care demands and reopen. Standing alone at the Capitol on the 13th day of the shutdown, the speaker said he was unaware of the details of the thousands of federal workers being fired by the Trump administration. It's a highly unusual mass layoff, widely seen as a way to seize on the shutdown to reduce the scope of government. Vice President J.D. Vance warned of painful cuts ahead, even as employee unions sue. We're barreling toward one of the longest shutdowns in American history, said Johnson, who is a Republican from Louisiana. With no end game in sight, the shutdown is expected to roll on for the foreseeable future. The closure halted routine government operations, shuttered Smithsonian museums and other landmark cultural institutions, and left airports scrambling with flight disruptions, all injecting more uncertainty into an already precarious economy. The House is out of legislative session, with Johnson refusing to call lawmakers back to Washington, while the Senate closed Monday for the federal holiday. That was Columbus Day. Will return to work Tuesday, but senators are stuck in a cul-de-sac of failed votes as Democrats refuse to relent on their health care demands. At its core, the shutdown is a debate over health care policy, particularly the Affordable Care Act subsidies that will expire for millions of Americans who rely on government aid to purchase their own health insurance policies on the Obamacare exchanges. Democrats demand these subsidies be extended. Republicans argue the issue can be dealt with later. With Congress and the White House stalemated, some are eyeing the end of the month as the next potential deadline to reopen the government. Open enrollment begins November 1 for the health program at issue, and Americans will face the prospect of skyrocketing insurance premiums. The Kaiser Family Foundation estimates monthly costs will double if Congress fails to renew the subsidy payments that expire on December 31. It's also when government workers on monthly pay schedules, including thousands of House aides, will go without paychecks. Next story in our section here on Nation and World. News outlets refuse to sign new Pentagon rules. The DOJ, that's the Department of Justice, wants to limit access information reporters can request. News organizations, including the New York Times, the Associated Press, and the conservative Newsmax television network, said Monday they will not sign a Defense Department document about its new press rules, making it likely that the Trump administration will evict their reporters from the Pentagon. Those outlets say the policy threatens to punish them for routine news gathering protected by the First Amendment. The Washington Post and The Atlantic on Monday also publicly joined the group that says it will not sign. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth reacted by posting the Times statement on social media and adding a hand-waving emoji. His team has said reporters who don't acknowledge the policy in writing by Tuesday must turn in badges admitting them to the Pentagon and clear out their workspaces the next day. The new rules bar journalists access to large swaths of the Pentagon without an escort, and say Hegseth can revoke press access to reporters who ask anyone in the Defense Department for information, classified or otherwise, that he is not approved for release. Next story in this section. China shows no sign of backing off the trade war. Washington and Beijing continue to elevate tariffs and restrictions. China did not back down Monday in back and forth with the U.S. over trade, calling for U.S. President Donald Trump to withdraw his latest threat of a 100% tariff and other export control measures announced over the weekend. In the latest escalation of the trade war between the two nations, Trump issued the tariff threat on all Chinese imports into the U.S. after China placed stricter restrictions on Thursday on rare earths, a vital resource used in electronics. The Chinese announcement was an apparent surprise to Trump, who called it, quote, an out and out of the blue move, unquote. While Trump did not withdraw the threat, he sounded more conciliatory than in the past, saying that in a Truth Social post Monday that the U.S. wants to help China, not hurt it, exclamation points included. China's Ministry of Commerce said Sunday the U.S. was, quote, severely damaging the atmosphere of trade negotiations, unquote. China urges the U.S. to promptly correct its erroneous practices, Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman Lin Zhang said Monday. China will certainly take resolute measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. So that's a little bit of an update, folks, on China shows no sign of backing off the trade war. And then I had also read to you news outlets are refusing to sign new Pentagon rules. Johnson says he won't negotiate for an end to the shutdown. And then the big note here was Zelensky plans a U.S. trip to talk with Trump and get some weapons support. Now to the digest of international stories in the news and world section. First of all, North Carolina. North Carolina Republican legislative leaders announced plans Monday to vote next week on redrawing the state's U.S. House district map, taking up President Donald Trump's call to secure more GOP seats nationwide and resist rival moves by Democrats. Next, Mississippi officials arrest four in shooting. Three people were arrested on murder charges and a fourth person on an attempted murder charge following a weekend shooting that left six people dead and more than a dozen injured in the Mississippi Delta town of Leland, or Leland, L-E-L-A-N-D, the FBI announced Monday. And now, medical debt. More than 2.5 million North Carolina residents are getting over $6.5 billion in medical debt eliminated through a state government effort that offered hospitals extra Medicaid funds from Washington if they gave participants the financial relief and implemented policies to discourage future liabilities. Here's one called Exile. Prominent Cuban dissident Jose Daniel Ferrer, that's F-E-R-R-E-R, left the island Monday for exile in the U.S. at the request of the U.S. government, Cuban and U.S. authorities confirmed. Here's one about a coup. Madagascar President Andry Rajoelina left the country after an elite military unit turned against the government in an apparent coup that followed weeks of youth-led protests, an opposition lawmaker said Monday. Georgia. Vernon Jones, a former Democratic state representative who switched parties in support of President Donald Trump, announced Monday he's running to become Georgia's Secretary of State, the top election official. Trust in our elections has been shaken, Jones said in a video announcing his candidacy for Secretary of State. And now the last couple of pieces. Venezuela. At least 14 people died in a mine collapse in El Callao, Venezuela, after torrential rains hit the southeast region, authorities said on Monday. And then finally in Mexico, the death toll from last week's torrential rains in Mexico jumped to 64 on Monday as searches expanded to communities previously cut off by landslides. So that's a little bit of the digest taking us on a tour around the world news and also some of the major stories in the nation and world section of the Star this morning. And now it's time to bear down, Wildcats, and go to sports. And that's over here on page 23 of the Star. And let's see what we have to read this morning on sports. It says, Cats earn number 13 spot in the Associated Press poll. And this is basketball. The Arizona Wildcats were ranked number 13 in the Associated Press preseason poll released Monday, but they'll have plenty of chances to prove worthy of a higher spot. And soon, the Wildcats will open the regular season in Las Vegas on November 3rd against defending national champion Florida, which was picked number 3 in the AP poll, while Big 12 defending champion Houston was picked 2nd behind number 1, Purdue. In all, Arizona is scheduled to face 9 ranked teams and 6 teams ranked above it in the AP's preseason top 25 poll. Houston, number 2, Florida, number 3, UConn, number 4, BYU, number 8, Texas Tech, 10, and UCLA, ranked 12th. The Wildcats will also face Iowa State, 16th, and Kansas State, ranked 19th. It's Kansas, ranked 19th, and Auburn, ranked 20th, plus San Diego State, which picked up the 27th most points in the preseason poll. So that's a little bit about Arizona basketball. Time to bear down and support those Arizona basketball Wildcats. How about Arizona football? Well, the grades are in for the first half of the season. In Ted Lasso-esque fashion, Arizona head coach Brent Brennan maintained a positive outlook on the Wildcats' first 6 games of the season, even in the minutes after a gut-wrenching loss. Arizona is 4-2, matching its win total from last season, and the Wildcats' only 2 setbacks of the season are against top 20 opponents in Iowa State and BYU. The Wildcats fell to the Cyclones in their Big 12 opener in Ames, Iowa. That's the Iowa Cyclones, Iowa State Cyclones, and lost to undefeated Brigham Young University in double overtime last Saturday. We just battled the first place team in the Big 12 for 4 quarters and 2 overtimes, and we never backed down, Brennan said on Saturday. We didn't get the result we wanted, but those kids played their hearts out, and that's something to be excited about. The goal is to win, and I understand that. We're a better football team. We're halfway through the season, and we have a lot to work on, but we have a lot to feel good about. Even though Arizona clawed back from a 2-touchdown deficit against BYU, the Wildcats frittered away a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. In 2 overtime periods, the Wildcats only scored a field goal, which Brennan called, quote, incredibly disappointing, unquote. The hard part is that at the end of the game, we had a chance to end it offensively, and we had a chance to end it defensively, and neither side of the ball did. So that's a little bit of mixed information, but still lots of enthusiasm about Arizona football from its coach. And now we want to turn to Friends adds ATP title to his resume. Arizona senior Jay Friend, that's Friend, continued to make a splash on the professional men's tennis circuit by winning his first ATP Challenger title on Sunday. That victory came on the heels of Friend winning the ITA All-American Championship last month. friend's latest title came in the Grossman Kennedy / LWH Solano Challenger in Fairfield, California. After earning his way into the main draw through qualifying, Friend won 5 consecutive matches. He defeated Australian Edward Winter, a junior at Pepperdine, 6-7, 6-3, and 6-2 in Sunday's final. And then finally, Tucson High senior, that's Bethany Linares, moves quickly toward her goals after topping 8 Tucson High and Pima College classes every day with a flag football or soccer practice, then maybe a 6-hour evening shift at an In-N-Out Burger. Bethany Linares wastes no time at night. "I can get right to sleep," she said. That's a must. An aspiring lawyer who is aiming to graduate a year early from Tucson High next spring while playing both flag football and soccer for the school. Linares is as efficient as she says she is driven to keep moving forward quickly. So, no time to waste. She is the High School Student Athlete of the Week. And congratulations to Tucson High's Bethany Linares. Now, just to end the broadcast this morning on an upbeat note, let's go to the Tucson Giving section of the Star. Tucson Giving. That's back here on page 13. Here we go. And let's see what we have to read to you here. FamFest benefits the STEELE, that's STEELE, the STEELE Children's Research Center. The kids of STEELE FamFest is a fun-filled evening of families, by families, and for families, all to benefit kids in treatment at the University of Arizona's STEELE Children's Research Center and their families. The third annual FamFest will be held November 9th at Funtastics Family Fun Park, and that address of Funtastics Family Fun Park is 221 East Wetmore Road. The event, which raised more than $90,000 in 2024, has become the largest annual fundraiser for Kids of STEELE, a family auxiliary for STEELE Children's. This year, the effort has raised $100,000 to date, but its purpose is more than financial support. Our goal is always to raise awareness about childhood illnesses and connect the community so we can all work together to help and support those families when they are going through a very tough time with their children, said Cara Stevens, the co-chair of the event with Andrea Walks. Stevens, a dental hygienist, was recruited to the board by past president Lacey Nagao. The Kids of STEELE mission plan to support STEELE Children's Research Center in its quest to teach, heal, and discover resonated, the Kids of STEELE mission to support STEELE Children's Research Center in its quest to teach, heal, and discover resonated with her as a healthcare professional. The mother of 3 kids, ages 10 and under, was also eager to embrace the opportunity to work with like-minded parents interested in fostering a love of volunteerism in their children. I think that putting our kids to work at Kids of STEELE events, wherever needed, help us to teach caring and empathy, she said. She has seen that in action. Throughout the year, Kids of STEELE, that's KOS families, participate in service projects such as spring service event, team up with Arizona football, a summer social, stocking, stuffing, and adoption of families in need during the holidays. So she said, our goal, said Cara Stevens, co-chair of the event, is always to raise awareness about childhood illnesses and connect the community so we can all work together to help and support those families when they are going through a very tough time with their children. So, if you go, the Kids of Steel Fam Fest, 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, November 9th. That's 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Sunday, November 9th. It's at the Fantastics Family Fun Park. And that address, again, 221 East Wetmore Road. The cost, $60 per person for Kids of Steel members, $75 per person for non-members. Patients of University of Arizona Steel Children's Research Center and their families are free. Festivities at this family-friendly, big-top-themed event include carnival games, a strolling magician, face painting, go-karts, laser tag, mini-golf music, raffles. Attendees can enjoy food by Brother John's, Charo Steak, Vito's Italian Bakery, Villa Peru, and Frost Gelato. The event will also feature guest speakers, including Dr. Fayez Gishan, also with a patient family who will discuss their daughter's experience with treatment for type 1 diabetes at Steel. Attendees will also have the opportunities to participate in Kids of Steel service projects. Title sponsors are Hazen Enterprises and Supercuts. So, there it is, the Kids of Steel Fam Fest, 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Sunday the 9th of November at Fantastics Family Fun Park. And that does it for me, folks. I hope that you have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. I'm Steve, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I brought you the Arizona Daily Star today, and I'm wishing you the best of goodbyes.